starting, though. Cindy is quick to shake her head. Phil doesn't like football. Oh, I say. Cue. More silence. So, Hannah, what are you majoring in? Music, vocal performance to be exact. Oh, she says. Silence. Garrett rests his shoulder against the tall oak bookcase near the door. I sneak a peek in his direction and notice that his expression is completely vacant. I sneak a peek in Phil's direction and notice that his expression is the same. Oh, God. I don't think I'll be able to survive this night. Something smells wonderful. I start. I should go check on the turkey. Cindy starts. We both laugh awkwardly. Let me help you with that. I practically dive to my feet, which is a big oh no no when you're wearing 4-inch heels. I sway for one heart-stopping moment, terrified I'm going to topple over, but then my equilibrium steadies and I'm able to take a step without falling. Yep, I'm a terrible girlfriend. Uncomfortable situations make me nervous and itchy, and as much as I want to stick by Garrett's side and help him through this hell of a night, I can't stomach the thought of being trapped in a room with two males whose animosity is tainting all the oxygen in the room. Shooting Garrett an apologetic look, I trail after Cindy, who leads me into a large modern kitchen with stainless steel appliances and black marble counters. The delicious aromas are stronger here, and there are enough tinfoil-covered dishes on the counter to feed an entire third-world country. Did you cook all this? I exclaim. She turns with a shy smile. I did. I love to cook, but Phil rarely gives me the chance to do it. He prefers to dine out. Cindy slips on a pair of plush mitts before opening the oven door. So, how long have you and Garrett been seeing each other? She asks conversationally, setting the enormous turkey pan on the stovetop. About a month. I watch as she lifts the aluminum foil off the massive bird. What about you and Mr. Graham? A little over a year now. Her back is turned to me so I can't see her expression, but something about her tone raises my guard. We met at a charity event I was organizing. Oh, are you an event planner? She sticks a thermometer into the breast area of the turkey, then the legs, and her shoulders visibly relax. It's ready, she murmurs. And to answer your question, I was an event planner, but I sold my company a few months ago. Phil said he misses me too much when I'm at work. What? I can't imagine ever giving up my job because the man in my life misses me too much when I'm at work. To me, that's a red flag if I ever saw one. Oh, that's nice. I gesture to the counter. Do you want me to help you heat everything up? Or are we not eating right away? Phil expects to eat the moment the turkey is ready. She laughs, but it sounds forced. When he sets a schedule, he expects everyone to follow it. Cindy points to the large bowl by the microwave. You can start by heating up the potatoes. I still need to make the gravy. She holds up a gravy mix packet. Usually I make it from scratch, using the turkey juices, but we're strapped for time, so this will have to do. She turns off the oven and places the turkey on the counter before turning her attention to the gravy. The wall over the stove is covered with hooks of pots and pans, and as she reaches up to grab one, her lacy sleeves ride up, and either I'm imagining it, or there's bluish-black bruising on the undersides of both her wrists, as if someone grabbed her hard. Her arms come down and the sleeves cover her forearms, and I decide that the black lace was playing tricks on my eyes. Do you live here with Mr. Graham, or do you have your own place? I ask as I wait for the mashed potatoes to finish nuking. I moved in with Phil about 2 weeks after we met, she admits. I have to be imagining things because there's no way that chord in her voice is bitterness, right? Oh, that's kind of impulsive. You guys hardly even knew each other, huh? No, we didn't. Okay, I'm not imagining it. That's absolutely bitterness. Cindy glances over her shoulder, an unmistakable flicker of sorrow in her eyes. I'm not sure anyone ever told you this, but spontaneity has the tendency to backfire on you. I have no clue how to respond, so I say, oh. I get the feeling I'm going to be saying that word a lot tonight. Chapter 36, Garrett. He hits her. The son of a bitch hits her. It only takes 30 minutes in Cindy's company for me to reach that conclusion. To pick up on the signs, I see it in the way she flinches whenever he touches her, just slightly and probably unnoticeable to anyone else, but it's the same way my mother would respond each time he came near her. It was almost like she was anticipating the next strike of his fist or his palm or his fucking foot. But that's not the only warning sign Cindy is broadcasting. The long-sleeved lacy thing over her red dress is a dead giveaway. I've fucked enough sorority girls to know that you don't match white heels with a black jacket. And then, there's the spark of fear that flicks through her eyes whenever my father so much as twitches in his chair. The sad droop of her shoulders when he tells her that the gravy is too watery. The slew of compliments she gives him because she's obviously trying to keep him happy. No, to keep him calm. We're halfway through dinner. My tie is choking the life out of me, and I'm not certain I can control my rage anymore. I don't think I can make it to dessert without attacking the old man and demanding to know how he can possibly do this to another woman. Cindy and Hannah are chatting about something. I have no clue what it is. My fingers grip my fork so tight I'm surprised it doesn't snap in half. He tried to talk to me about hockey earlier when Hannah and Cindy were in the kitchen. I tried talking back. I'm sure I even managed to form proper sentences with subjects and predicates and all that shit. But from the second Hannah and I walked into this godforsaken house, my mind has been somewhere else. Every room holds a memory that brings bile to my throat. The kitchen is where he broke my nose for the first time. Upstairs is where I got the brunt of it, usually in my bedroom, where I don't dare venture tonight because I'm scared the walls might close in on me. The living room is where he slammed me against the wall after my eighth grade league didn't make it to the playoffs. I noticed he hung a painting over the hole in the drywall, though.
So yeah, Hannah is saying. Now I'm singing a solo, which is what I should have done in the first place.
Cindy makes a sympathetic noise with her tongue.
This boy sounds like a selfish ass.
Cynthia, my father says sharply. Language.
There it is again, that flinch. The weak, I'm sorry, should come next, but to my surprise, she doesn't apologize.
You don't agree, Phil? Imagine you were still playing for the Rangers and your goalie left you in the lurch right before the first game in the Stanley Cup series.
My father's jaw stiffens.
The two situations aren't comparable.
She quickly backpedals.
No, I guess they're not.
I shovel a fork full of mashed potatoes and stuffing into my mouth. My father's cool gaze travels to Hannah.
How long have you been seeing my son?
From the corner of my eye, I see her shift in discomfort.
A month?
He nods, almost like he's pleased to hear it. When he speaks again, I realize precisely what he's pleased about.
It's not serious, then.
Hannah frowns. I do, too, because I know what he's thinking. No, what he's hoping. That this thing with Hannah is just a fling. That it'll fizzle out sooner rather than later, and then I can go back to focusing exclusively on hockey. But he's wrong. Hell, I was wrong, too. I thought having a girlfriend would distract me from my goals and split my focus, but it hasn't. I love being with Hannah, but I haven't lost sight of hockey either. I'm still bringing it in practice, still smoking my opponents on the ice. This last month has shown me that I can have Hannah and hockey in my life and give both of them the attention they deserve. Did Garrett tell you he's planning on entering the draft after graduation? My father asks. Hannah nods in response. Once he gets drafted, his schedule will become even more hectic. I imagine yours will too. My father purses his lips. Where do you see yourself after graduation? Broadway? Recording an album?
I haven't decided yet,
she replies, reaching for her water glass. I notice that her plate is empty. She's finished all her food, but hasn't asked for seconds. Neither have I, though I can't deny that Cindy's cooking is fucking fantastic. I haven't eaten a turkey that juicy in years. Well, the music industry is a tough one to break into. Requires a lot of hard work and perseverance. My father pauses, and an incredible amount of focus.
I'm well aware of that.
Hannah's lips form a tight line, as if she has a million more things to say but is forcing herself not to. Professional sports is the same way, my dad says pointedly. Requires that same level of focus. Distractions can be costly. His head tips toward me. Isn't that right, son? I reach for Hannah's hand and cover her knuckles with my palm. Some distractions are worth it. His nostrils flare.
Looks like everyone has finished eating, Cindy blurts out. How about some dessert?
My stomach churns at the thought of spending even another second in this house. Actually, Hannah and I have to go, I say roughly. The weather forecast called for snow tonight, so we want to head back before the roads get bad. Cindy's head swivels to the floor-to-ceiling window on the other side of the dining room. Beyond the glass, there isn't a speck of white in the air or on the ground. But God bless her, she doesn't comment on the snow-free state of the street. If anything, she looks almost relieved that this uncomfortable evening is about to come to an end.
I'll clear the table,
Hannah offers. Cindy nods.
Thanks, Hannah. I appreciate it.
Garrett. My father scrapes his chair back. A word. Then he walks out. Fuck him and his fucking words. The bastard didn't even thank his girlfriend for the lovely meal she prepared. I'm so goddamn sick of this man, but I swallow my anger and follow him out of the dining room. What do you want? I demand once we enter his study. And don't bother ordering me to stay for dessert. I came home for Thanksgiving, we ate some turkey, and now I'm leaving. I don't give a shit about dessert. We need to talk about that girl. That girl? I laugh harshly. You mean Hannah? Because she's not just some girl. She's my girlfriend. She's a liability. He snaps. I roll my eyes. How do you figure? You lost two of your last three games. He roars. And that's her fault? Damn right it is. She's making you lose sight of the game. I'm not the only player on the team, I say flatly, and I'm not the only one who made mistakes during those games. You took a costly penalty in the last one, he spits out. Yeah, I did. Big fucking deal. We're still number one in our conference. Still number two overall. Number two? He's shouting now, his hands forming tight fists as he takes a step toward me. And you're happy with being number two? I raised you to be number one, you little shit. Once upon a time, those blazing eyes and red cheeks would have made me flinch too. But not anymore. Once I turned 16 and gained 2 inches and 40 pounds of my father, I realized I no longer had to be afraid of him. I'll never forget the look in his eyes the first time I fought back. His fist had been coming toward my face, and in a moment of clarity, I realized I could block it. I didn't have to stand there and take the abuse anymore. I could dish it right back at him. And I did. I still remember the satisfying crunch of my knuckles when they connected with his jaw. Even as he'd growled in fury, there'd been genuine shock and fear in his eyes as he'd stumbled backward from the force of the impact. That was the last time he ever raised a hand to me. "What are you gonna do?" I taunt, nodding at his fists. "Hit me? What? You're tired of taking it out on that nice woman out there?" His entire body goes stiffer than granite. "You think I don't know you're using her as your punching bag?" I hiss out. "Watch your fucking mouth, boy." The fury in my gut boils over. "Fuck you," I hurl out. My breathing goes shallow as I stare into his enraged eyes. "How could you lay a hand on her? How could you lay a hand on anyone? What the fuck is the matter with you?" He stalks toward me, stopping when we're mere foot apart. For a second, I think he might actually strike me. I almost want him to. That way I can strike back. I can smash my fists into his pathetic face and show him what it's like to get beat on by someone who's supposed to love you. But my feet stay rooted in place, my hands pressed tightly against my sides. Because no matter how badly I want to do it, I will never lower myself to his level. I will never lose control of my temper and be like him. "You need help," I choke out. "Seriously, old man, you need some fucking help, and I really hope you get it before you hurt that woman any more than you already have." I stagger out of his study. My legs wobble so hard it's a miracle they manage to carry me all the way to the kitchen, where I find Hannah rinsing plates at the sink. Cindy is loading the dishwasher. Both women glance over at my entrance and both their faces go pale.
"Cindy,"
I clear my throat, but the massive lump remains. "I'm sorry to steal Hannah away, but we have to go now." After a long beat, the blonde's head jerks in a quick nod. "That's fine. I can do the rest." Hannah shuts off the faucet and approaches me slowly. "Are you okay?" I shake my head. "Can you go wait in the car? I need to talk to Cindy for a moment." Rather than leave the kitchen, Hannah walks back to Cindy, hesitates, then gives the woman a warm hug. "Thank you so much for dinner. Happy Thanksgiving." "Happy Thanksgiving," Cindy murmurs with a strained smile. I reach into the inner pocket of my jacket and extract my keys. "Here, get it started for us," I tell Hannah. She exits the room without another word. Taking a breath, I cross the tiled floor and stand directly in front of Cindy. To my horror, she reacts with that tiny, fearful flinch I've been witnessing all night. As if this is a like-father-like-son situation. As if I'm going to... "I'm not going to hurt you." My voice cracks like a fucking egg. I feel sick that I even have to assure her of that. Panic floods her eyes.
"What? Oh, honey, no, I didn't think..."
"Yes, you did," I say quietly. "It's okay. I'm not taking it personally. I know what it's like to..." I swallow. "Look, I don't have a lot of time here because I need to get the hell out of this house before I do something I might regret, but I just need you to know something." She uneasily lets go of the dishwasher door.
"What is it?"
"I..." Another deep gulp, and then I get right to the point, because really, neither one of us wants to be having this conversation. "He did it to me, and my mom too, okay? He abused us, physically and verbally, for years." Her lips part, but she doesn't say a word. My heart squeezes as I force myself to keep going. "He's not a good man. He's dangerous and violent and sick. He's sick. You don't have to tell me what he's doing to you. Or hell, Maybe I'm wrong, and he's not doing anything. But I think he is, because I see it in the way you act around him. I acted that way, too. Every move I made, every word I said, everything I did was rooted in fear, because I was desperate for him not to beat the shit out of me again. Her stricken look is all the confirmation I need. Anyway, I inhale deeply. I'm not going to drag you out of here over my shoulder or call the cops and tell them there's domestic abuse going on in this house. It's not my place, and I won't interfere. But I need you to know a couple things. One, it's not your fault. Don't you ever blame yourself, because it's all on him. You did nothing to invite his criticism and his verbal attacks, and you didn't fail to meet his expectations, because his expectations are fucking impossible to meet. My chest seizes so hard, my ribs ache. And two, if you ever need anything, anything at all, I want you to call me, okay? If you need to talk, or if you want to leave him and need someone to help you pack or move or whatever, call me. Or if he does something and you need help, for fuck's sake, call me. Can you promise to do that? Cindy looks stunned, completely and utterly stunned. Her blue eyes are glassy, and she starts blinking fast, as if she's trying to ward off tears. The kitchen becomes as silent as a funeral home. She just stares at me, blinking wildly, the fingers of one hand toying with her sleeve. After what feels like an eternity, she gives a shaky nod and whispers, "Thank you." Heat blasts from the air vents when I slide into the driver's seat. Hannah has started the engine and she's already buckled up, as if she's as desperate to get away from here as I am. I put the car in drive and speed away from the curb, needing to put distance between me and that brownstone. If I'm lucky enough to play for Boston one day, I plan on living as far away from Beacon Hill as possible.
"So that was kind of brutal," Hannah remarks.
I can't stop the laugh that shudders out.
"Kind of,"
she sighs.
"I was trying to be diplomatic."
"Don't bother. That was a nightmare from start to finish." My fingers curl around the steering wheel so tightly my knuckles turn white. He hits her. There's a beat of silence, but when Hannah answers, it's with regret and not surprise.
"I thought that might be the case. Her sleeves rode up in the kitchen, and I thought I saw some bruises on her wrists."
The revelation sends a fresh bolt of anger whipping through me. Damn it. Part of me was still hoping I might be wrong about Cindy. Silence settles between us as I head for the highway ramp. My hand rests on the gear shift, and Hannah covers it with hers. She strokes my knuckles, her gentle touch easing some of the pressure in my chest. "She was scared of me," I mumble. This time, Hannah does sound surprised.
"What are you talking about?"
When I was alone in the kitchen with Cindy, I took a step closer, and she flinched. She flinched, like she was scared I might hurt her. My throat clogs up. "I mean, I get it. My mom was jumpy too, so was I, but fuck. I can't believe she thought I was capable of hurting her." Sadness softens Hannah's voice.
"It's probably not just you. If he's abusing her, then she's probably scared of anyone who comes near her. I was the same way for a while after the rape, jumpy, nervous, suspicious of everyone. It was a long time before I was finally able to relax around strangers, and even now, there's still things I won't do, like drink in public. Well, unless you're there to play bodyguard."
I know that last line is an attempt to make me smile, but it doesn't. I'm still preoccupied by Cindy's reaction. In fact, I don't feel like talking anymore. I just can't. Fortunately, Hannah doesn't push me. I love that about her, how she never tries to fill silences with forced conversation. She asks if I'm okay with music, and when I nod, She plugs in her iPod and loads up a playlist that does make me smile. It's the classic rock set I emailed her when we first met, though I notice she doesn't start it from the first song, because the first song happens to be my mother's favorite, and I'm pretty sure that if I hear it right now, I'll burst into tears. Which just goes to show that Hannah Wells is amazing. She's so fucking attuned to me, my moods, my pain. I've never been with anyone who can read me so well. An hour goes by. I know it's an hour because that's how long the playlist lasts. And when it ends, Hannah puts on a different mix, which makes me smile too because it consists of a whole lot of Rat Pack, Motown, and Bruno Mars. I'm calm now. Well, calmer. Every time I feel like I'm relaxing, I remember Cindy's fear-ridden eyes and the pressure squeezes my chest again. As uncertainties eddy in my gut, I force myself not to dwell on the one question that keeps pricking at my brain. But as I speed off the exit ramp and drive toward the two-lane road that will take us to Hastings, the question pops up again, and this time, I can't bat it away. What if I'm capable of it? Hannah turns down the volume. What? What if I'm capable of hurting someone? I ask hoarsely. What if I'm just like him? She answers with absolute conviction. You're not. Misery crawls up my spine. I have his temper, I know I do. I wanted to strangle him tonight. I press my lips together. It took all my willpower not to throw him into a wall and beat him to death. But it wasn't fucking worth it. He's not worth it. She reaches for my hand and laces her fingers through mine. And that's why you're not like him. You have that willpower, and that means you don't have his temper, because he can't control his. He lets the anger fuel him, drive him to hurt the people around him, people who are weaker than him. Her grip on my hand tightens. What would you do if I pissed you off right now? I blink. What do you mean? Let's pretend we're not in the car right now. We're in my room or your house, and I don't know, tell you that I slept with someone else. No, I tell you that I've been sleeping with the entire hockey team since the second we met. The thought makes my insides clench. What would you do? She prompts. I turn to her with a frown. I'd end it and walk out the door. That's it? You wouldn't be tempted to hit me? I recoil in horror. Of course not, Jesus. Exactly. Her palm moves gently over my cold knuckles. Because you're not like him. No matter how angry someone made you, you wouldn't hit them. That's not true. I've gotten into a brawl or two on the ice, I admit. And one time, I punched a guy at Malone's. But that's because he said some nasty shit about Logan's mom and I could not throw down for my friend. She sighs. I'm not saying you're incapable of violence. Everyone is capable of it. I'm saying you wouldn't hurt someone you love, at least not intentionally. I pray to God she's right. But when you inherited your DNA from a man who does hurt the people he loves, who the hell knows? My hands start to shake, and I know Hannah feels it because she squeezes my right hand to steady it. Pull over, she says. I frown again. We're driving down a dark stretch of road, and even though there are no other cars in sight, I don't like the idea of stopping in the middle of nowhere. Why? Because I want to kiss you, and I can't do that when your eyes are on the road. An unwitting smile springs to my lips. Nobody has ever asked me to pull over before so they can kiss me, and although I'm exhausted and pissed off and sad and who knows what else, the thought of kissing Hannah right now sounds like pure fucking heaven. Without another word, I pull off onto the shoulder, move the gear shift to park, and flick the emergency blinkers. She slides closer and grasps my chin. Delicate fingertips stroke my stubble, and then she leans in and kisses me, just the fleeting touch of her lips before she pulls back and whispers, "You're not like him. You will never be like him." Her lips tickle my nose before kissing the tip of it. "You're a good person." She plants a tiny kiss on my cheek. "You're honest and kind and compassionate." She lightly bites my bottom lip. "I mean, don't get me wrong. You're a total dick sometimes, but it's a tolerable kind of dickishness." I can't stop a grin. "You're not like him," she repeats, firmer this time. "The only thing you two have in common is that you're both gifted hockey players. That's it. You are not like him." Jesus, I needed to hear that. Her words penetrate that terrified place in my heart, and as the pressure in my chest dissipates, I cup the back of her head and kiss her hard. My tongue slides into her mouth, and I groan happily, because she tastes like cranberries and smells like cherries, and I fucking love it. I want to kiss her all night, for the rest of my fucking life. But I haven't forgotten where we are at the moment. I reluctantly break the kiss, just as her hand sneaks toward my crotch. "What are you doing?" I croak, then groan again when she rubs my aching cock over my trousers. "What does it feel like?" I grab her hand to still its movements. "I don't know if you're aware of this, but we're sitting in the car, on the side of the road." "No, really? I thought we were on an airplane on our way to Palm Springs." I choke out a laugh, but it turns into a wheeze when the temptress beside me strokes me again. She squeezes the head of my cock and my balls tighten, little zings of heat racing through me. Oh, hell. This is so not the time, but I have to know if she's as turned on as I am, and I can't stop my hand from drifting to her knee. I caress the baby soft skin of her thigh before slipping my hand under her dress. I cup her over her panties and moan when I feel the damp material against my palm. She's wet, really wet. Somehow I manage to yank my hand away. "We can't do this."
"Why not?"
An impish twinkle dances in her eyes, which doesn't surprise me because I'm quickly discovering that Hannah is adventurous as hell once she lets down her guard and trusts someone. And it still floors me that it's me she trusts. "Anyone can drive by," I pause meaningfully, "including a police patrol." "Then we better be fast." Before I can blink, she unzips my pants and slides her hand inside my boxers. My eyes promptly roll to the top of my head. "Get in the back seat," I burst out. Her eyes widen, then fill with delight.
"Really?
Hell, if we're gonna do this, we might as well do it right," I answer with a sigh. "Go big or go home, remember?" It makes me laugh how quickly she dives into the back seat. Chuckling, I pop the glove box and grab the strip of condom stash there, then join her in the back. When she sees what I'm holding, her jaw drops.
"Are those condoms? Okay, I think I might be mad about this, except I probably shouldn't be because it's very helpful right now. But seriously, you keep condoms in your car?"
I shrug. "Of course. What if I'm driving along one day and come across Kate Upton stranded on the side of the road?" Hannah snorts.
"I see. Is that your type then? Busty blondes with curves to spare?"
I cover her body with mine and prop my elbows on either side of her. "Nah, I prefer busty brunettes." I bury my face in her neck and nuzzle her skin. One in particular, who, by the way, also has curves to spare. My hands slide down to her waist and tiny hips. I glide my palms underneath her and squeeze her round bottom and a grabbable ass. I move one hand between her legs and the tightest pussy on the planet. She shivers. "You have the dirtiest mouth." "Yeah,
But you still love me. Her breath hitches.
Yeah, I do.
Her green eyes shine up at me.
I love you.
My heart damn near explodes as those three sweet words hang between us. Other girls have said that to me before, but this time it's different. Because it's Hannah saying it, and she's not just any girl. And because I know that when she says she loves me, she actually means me, Garrett, and not Breyer's hockey star or Mr. Popularity or Phil Graham's son. She loves me. It's difficult to speak past the enormous lump in my throat.
I love you, too.
It's the first time I've told a woman I love her, and it feels so damn right. Hannah smiles. Then she pulls my head down and kisses me, and suddenly, we're not talking anymore. I push her dress up and yank my trousers down. I don't even take off her panties, I just shove the crotch aside, roll on a condom with one hand, and guide my cock to her opening. She moans the instant I enter her, and I wasn't kidding about how tight she is. Her pussy clutches me like a vice, and I see stars. So close to losing it, I have to will the climax away. I've fucked girls in my car before. I've never made love to one. You're so beautiful, I mumble, unable to take my eyes off her. I start to move, dying to go slow and make it last, but I'm painfully aware of our surroundings. A good Samaritan, or worse, a cop, might spot the Jeep and think we need roadside assistance. And if they decide to approach us, they'll get an eyeful of my bare ass, see my hips pumping and Hannah's arms clutching my back. Besides, in this position, it's hard to maneuver. All I can manage is fast, shallow strokes, but Hannah doesn't seem to mind. She makes the sexiest noises as I move inside her, breathy sighs and shaky whimpers, and when I hit this one certain spot inside her, she moans so loudly I have to clench my ass cheeks to stop from coming. I can feel the orgasm hurtling toward me, but I want her to come too. I want to hear her cry out and milk me dry as her pussy spasms around me. I reach between us and press my thumb on her clit, rubbing it gently. Give it to me, baby. I rasp in her ear. Come for me. Let me feel you coming around my cock. Her eyes squeeze shut, hips rising to meet my hurried thrusts, and then she cries out in pleasure, and I come so hard my vision wavers and my mind fragments into a million pieces. When the mind-shattering pleasure finally abates, I register what song is playing in the car. My eyes fly open. Did you re-download One Direction? Her mouth twitches.
No.
Uh-huh. So why is Story of My Life playing? I demand. She pauses, then lets out a big sigh.
Because I like One Direction. There, I said it.
You're lucky I love you, I warn her, because I wouldn't stand for it otherwise. Hannah grins.
You're lucky I love you. Because you're a total asshole, and there aren't a lot of girls who'd put up with it.
She's probably right about the asshole thing. She's definitely right about the lucky part.
Chapter 37, Hannah.
I don't like this, I declare. I mean it, babe. My legs are starting to hurt. I told you I'm not flexible. Garrett's laughter vibrates through my body, my naked body, I should add, because we're in the middle of having sex, which I just confess to not liking. Maybe I am a mood killer. But you know what? I don't care. I'm still vetoing this position. Garrett kneels in front of me and my ankles are up on his shoulders, and maybe if he wasn't a big strapping hockey player, my legs wouldn't feel like they're resting on top of the frickin' Empire State Building and be cramping the living hell out of me. Still laughing, Garrett leans forward and my muscles breathe a sigh of relief as I slide my legs down and hook them around his ass.
Immediately, the angle changes and a moan slips out of my mouth.
Better?
He says huskily. Oh my God, yes, do that again.
I have no idea what I did.
You twisted your hips like, oh, yeah, like that. Every time he fills me, my core clamps around his erection. Every time he retreats, I feel empty, achy, desperate. I'm addicted to this guy, to his kisses and his taste, to the feel of his short hair beneath my fingers and the smooth sinew of his back when I dig my nails into it. His hips flex and his breathing quickens and he thrusts harder, deeper, turning my vision into a white haze. Then he reaches to the place where we're joined and rubs my clit and off we go. He comes first but keeps pumping inside me even as he trembles in release. His climax sets me off and I tremble even harder, biting my lip to stop from crying out so I don't alert his roommates to the delicious sensations coursing through my body right now. Afterward, he rolls on his back and I lie on top of him, scaling his body like a monkey as I plant little kisses on his face and neck.
Why do you always have so much energy after sex?
He grumbles. Don't know, don't care. I smack kisses all over him until he's laughing in delight. I know he likes the attention, and it's a good thing he does because I can't stop giving it to him. For some reason, I turn into an affection monster when I'm around him. Life is good again. A week has passed since Thanksgiving, and Garrett and I are still going strong. We've been busy, though. All our final papers are due soon, including the one for Tolbert's class, which I've been helping Garrett with. His practice schedule is just as jam-packed as ever, and so is mine as I prepare for the showcase. But hey, at least I'm finally excited about it again. Jay and I came up with an arrangement that I love, and I'm confident I'm going to put on a hell of a performance. But I still haven't forgiven Cass and Mary Jane for what they did. MJ has texted several times asking if we can meet up and talk, but I've been ignoring her. And since Fiona got me my own rehearsal space in one of the senior choir rooms, I haven't run into MJ or Cass since they dumped me. And the icing on the I love my fucking life cake? My dad called last week with some good news. My parents are meeting me at Aunt Nicole's for Christmas. I've already booked my ticket, and I can't wait to see them. But I'm disappointed that Garrett can't come with me. I invited him, but the dates didn't work out because the team's got a game scheduled the day after I leave, and another one 2 days before I get back. So Garrett will be spending the holidays with Logan, who is apparently from a town 20 minutes from Hastings. Loud pounding on Garrett's door jolts me out of my happy thoughts. The door is locked, so I'm not worried about anyone barging in, but I still reach for the blanket out of habit.
Sorry to interrupt, boys and girls, Logan calls out, but it's time to put your P's and V's away. Gotta go, G.
I shoot Garrett a blank look. P's and V's? Half the time I can barely make sense of Logan's made-up acronyms and abbreviations. Garrett grins at me.
Oh, come on, really? Even I got that one. It's grade school shit.
I think it over, then blush. How exactly does one put away their vagina? He snickers.
Ask Logan. Actually, please don't.
He slides out of bed and wanders around searching for his clothes.
Are you coming to the game after rehearsal?
Yeah, but I don't think I'll make it before the second period.
Ugh!
By the time I get to the arena, it'll probably be standing room only.
I'll get someone to save a seat for you.
Thanks. I pop into the bathroom, freshen up, and come out to find Garrett on the edge of the bed, leaning over to put on a pair of socks. My heart skips a beat at the sight of him. Messy hair, biceps flexing, red splotches on his neck from where I nibbled on it. He's frickin' gorgeous. 5 minutes later, we leave his house and go our separate ways. I have Tracy's car, so I drive back to campus for rehearsal. Now that Cass is out of the picture,
I can finally enjoy singing again. And I do. My own personal cellist and I hammer out the ending of the song, and a couple hours later, I'm driving toward Breyer's Hockey Center. I texted Allie to see if she wanted to come to the game with me, but she's busy with Sean, and my other friends are buried under mountains of schoolwork, which makes me grateful that I got a head start on mine. Most of my courses are performance or music theory, so I've really only had to focus on the British Lit and ethics papers, both of which are almost done. I get to the arena later than I hoped. The third period has just started, and I'm dismayed to see 1-1 flashing on the scoreboard because Breyer is playing a Division II team from Buffalo tonight. Garrett had been confident the game wouldn't be at all competitive, but apparently he was wrong. There's an empty seat waiting for me behind the home team's bench, courtesy of a senior named Natalie. Garrett has mentioned her before, but I haven't met her until now. Apparently, she's been dating Birdie since freshman year, which is impressive. A lot of college relationships don't seem to last that long. Natalie is funny and sweet, and we have a good time watching the game together. When Dean takes a particularly hard hit that sends him sprawling across the ice, we both gasp in alarm. "Oh my God!" Natalie bursts out. "Is he okay?" Fortunately, Dean is fine. He shakes it off and jumps up, skating toward the Breyer box for a line change. The moment Garrett hits the ice, my pulse beats up. He's a force to be reckoned with. Fast footwork, skilled stick handling, hard hitter. His first pass connects with Birdie's stick, and they fly across the blue line into the zone. Birdie dumps the puck and Garrett chases it. So does the other team's center. And elbows are thrown behind the crease as the Buffalo forward tries to gain the upper hand. Garrett comes out victorious and zips around the net, snapping off a quick shot. The goalie stops it easily, but the rebound bounces directly in Birdie's path. He slaps the puck right back at the goaltender, whose glove whips up a second too late. Natalie leaps to her feet and cheers herself hoarse as Birdie's goal lights the scoreboard. We hug excitedly, then hold our breaths as the last 3 minutes of play tick by. The other team scrambles to gain possession of the puck, but Breyer's sophomore center wins the next faceoff and we dominate the rest of the game, which ends with a final score of 2-1. Natalie and I walk toward the aisle, jostled in all directions as we're shuffled down the stairs like cattle. "I'm so glad you're with Garrett," she gushes. The comment makes me smile, because she's only known me for 20 minutes. "Me too," I answer. "Seriously, he's such a great guy, but he's so freaking intense when it comes to hockey. He hardly drinks, doesn't get serious with anyone. It's not healthy to be that focused on something, you know?" We leave the rink but don't head to the arena exit. Instead, we make our way through the crowd toward the hallway that leads to the locker room so we can wait for our guys. Garrett Graham is my guy. It's a surreal thought, but I like it. "That's why I think you're good for him," she says. "He looks so happy and relaxed every time I see him." My spine stiffens when I spot a familiar face in the crowd. Garrett's father. He's 20 feet away from us, headed in the same direction as we are. His baseball cap rests low on his forehead, but that doesn't stop him from getting noticed because a group of guys in Breyer jerseys quickly approach him for an autograph. He signs their jerseys, then a photo that one of them hands him. I can't see the picture, but I imagine it's an action shot of him from his glory days, just like the ones I saw framed in his house. Phil Graham, hockey legend. Now living vicariously through his son. I'm so focused on my hatred for Garrett's father that I don't pay attention to where I'm walking, and a startled laugh leaves my mouth when I bump into someone. Hard. "I'm sorry, I wasn't watching where..." The apology dies on my lips when I notice who I bumped into. Rob Delaney looks as stunned as I feel. In the split second that our eyes lock, I turn into an ice statue. Shivers rack every inch of my body. My feet are frozen in place. Wave after wave of horror slams into me. I haven't seen Rob since the day he testified in court on my rapist's behalf. I don't know what to say or do or think. Someone shouts, "Wellesley!" I turn my head. When I turn it back, Rob is hurrying away like he's trying to outrun a bullet. I can't breathe. Garrett comes up beside me. I know it's him because I recognize the gentle sweep of his hand on my cheek, but my gaze stays glued to Rob's retreating back. He's wearing a Buffalo State jacket. Does he go there? I never bothered finding out what happened to Aaron's friends, where they went to college, what they're doing now. The last time I had any contact with Rob Delaney, it was indirectly. It was when my dad attacked Rob's father in the hardware store in Ransom.
Anna, look at me.
I can't tear my eyes off Rob, who hasn't made it out the door yet. The group of friends he's with stop to talk to a few people, and he tosses a panicky glance over his shoulder, paling when he realizes I'm still staring at him.
Hannah, Jesus, you're white as a sheet. What's wrong?
I guess I'm pale too. I guess I look like Rob. I guess we've both just seen a ghost. The next thing I know, my head is wrenched to the side as Garrett's hands clutch my chin to force eye contact.
What's going on? Who is that guy?
He's followed my gaze, and now he's watching Rob with visible mistrust.
Nobody, I say weakly. Hannah?
It's nobody, Garrett, please. I turn my back to the door, effectively eliminating any temptation to look Rob's way. Garrett pauses, searches my face, then he sucks in a breath.
Oh, fuck, is it?
His horrified question hangs between us.
No,
I say quickly. It's not, I promise. My lungs burn from lack of oxygen, so I force myself to take a deep breath. He's just a guy.
What guy? What's his name?
Rob. Nausea circles my belly like a school of sharks. Rob Delaney. Garrett's gaze moves past my shoulder, which tells me that Rob is still here.
Damn it! Why can't he just leave already? Who is he, Hannah?
Hard as I try, I can no longer pretend that my whole world hasn't been knocked off kilter. My face collapses and I whisper, "It's Aaron's best friend. He's one of the guys who testified against me after the..." Garrett is already stalking away. Chapter 38, Garrett.
My blood roars between my ears. I hear Hannah calling after me, but I can't stop moving. It's like I'm watching the world through a red mist. I've gone on autopilot, turning into an asshole-seeking missile that travels in a straight path toward Rob Delaney, the bastard who helped Hannah's rapist get off without so much as a slap on the wrist.
Delaney, I call out, his shoulders tense. Several people glance our way, but there's only one person I'm interested in at the moment. He turns around, dark eyes momentarily flickering with panic when he notices me. He saw me talking to Hannah, probably figured out what she told me. He says something to his friends and takes a hasty step away from the group, and my jaw turns to stone as he warily approaches me.
"Who the hell are you?"
he mutters.
"Hannah's boyfriend."
His expression conveys unmistakable fear, but he still tries to play it off cool.
"Yeah? Well, what do you want?"
I draw a calming breath. It doesn't calm me down at all. I just wanted to meet the asshole who aided and abetted a rapist. There's a long moment of silence. Then he scowls at me.
"Back off. You don't know shit about me, man."
"I know everything about you," I correct,
my whole body trembling with barely restrained fury. I know. You let your friend drug my girl. I know you stood by while he took her upstairs and hurt her. I know you committed perjury afterward to back him up. I know. You're a piece of shit without a conscience.
Fuck off, he says again, but his bravado wavers. He looks stricken now.
Really? Fuck off? That's all you have to say? I guess that makes sense.
I swallow the acid coating my throat. You're a fucking coward who couldn't defend an innocent girl, so why would you have the balls to defend yourself?
The bitter accusations trigger his anger.
Get out of my face, man. I didn't come here tonight to get railed on by some dumb jock. Go back to your slut girlfriend and...
Oh, hell no. My fist snaps out. After that, everything is a blur. People are shouting. Someone grabs the back of my jacket, trying to yank me off Delaney. My hand throbs. I taste blood in my mouth. It's like an out-of-body experience that I can't even describe because I'm not there. I'm lost in a haze of unchecked anger.
Garrett!
Someone slams me into a wall, and I instinctively release a right hook. I glimpse a flash of red, hear my name again, a sharp, emphatic, Garrett! And my vision clears in time to see the blood spurting from the corner of Logan's mouth.
Oh, shit. G?
His voice is low and ominous, but there's no mistaking the worry swimming in his eyes.
G, you've gotta stop!
All the oxygen in my lungs shudders out in a rush. I glance around and find a sea of faces staring at me, hear hushed voices and confused whispers. And then Coach appears, and I'm suddenly hit with the gravity of what I've just done. 2 hours later, I stand in front of Hannah's door, and I barely have enough strength left to knock. I can't remember the last time I reached this level of intense exhaustion. Instead of a post-game celebration with my team tonight, I sat in Coach's office for more than an hour and listened to him shout at me for starting a fight on school property, which, by the way, earned me a one-game suspension. To be honest, I'm surprised the punishment wasn't stiffer. But after Coach and a few other Briar officials got the whole story out of me, they decided to go easy on me. Hannah had given me permission to tell them about her history with Delaney, insisting that she didn't want them to think I was some psycho who went around attacking random hockey fans for no good reason, but I still feel like a shit for sharing her trauma with my coach. One game suspension. Jesus, I deserve a hell of a lot worse. I wonder if my dad has heard about this suspension yet, but I know he must have. I bet he has someone at Briar on his payroll to feed him information about me. Luckily, he wasn't around when I left the arena, so I was spared from dealing with his wrath tonight. Logan was there, though, waiting for me outside, and I've never been more ashamed in my life as I apologized to my best friend for hitting him. But Hannah had also given me the okay to share the truth with Logan, and after I told him who Rob was and why I went after him, Logan was ready to go after Rob himself, and then he apologized to me for pulling me off the bastard. That's when I realized how much I fucking love the guy. He might be crushing on my girlfriend, but he's still the best friend I've ever had. And hell, I can't even fault him for the girlfriend crushing part, because why wouldn't he want to be with someone as incredible as Hannah? I'm nervous as hell when she opens the door to let me in, but she surprises me by immediately throwing her arms around me.
Are you okay?
She says urgently.
I'm fine.
It sounds like I'm speaking through a mouthful of gravel, so I clear my throat before continuing.
I'm sorry. I'm so fucking sorry, baby.
She tilts her head to look at me, regret etched into her face.
You shouldn't have gone after him.
I know.
My throat closes up. I couldn't stop myself. I kept picturing that bastard sitting on the witness stand, calling you a whore and saying you took drugs and seduced his friend. It made me sick. I weakly shake my head. No, it made me crazy. She takes my hand and leads me to her room, closing the door behind her before joining me on the edge of the bed. She reaches for my hand again and gasps when she sees the state of my knuckles. They're cracked and caked with blood, and even though I washed my hands thoroughly before coming here, the little cuts have opened up and are now dribbling with blood.
How much trouble are you in?
She asks. Not as much as I deserve. One game suspension, which shouldn't hurt the team too bad. Our record is solid enough that we can afford a loss if it comes down to that. And the cops weren't called because Delaney refused to press charges. The Buffalo coach tried to get him to change his mind, but he told everyone that he provoked me. Her eyebrows shoot up.
He did?
Yeah. I let out a breath. Too much of a hassle dealing with the police, I guess. He probably just wanted to go back to whatever hole he crawled out of and pretend it never happened. Just like how he pretended that his best friend didn't hurt you. Bile bubbles in my throat. How the fuck is that fair, Hannah? Why aren't you angrier? Why aren't you furious that your rapist is walking around free and his slimy friends are the ones who helped him get off? She sighs.
It's not fair, and I am angry. But, well, life isn't always fair, babe. I mean, look at your father. He's every much a criminal as Aaron is, and he's not in jail either. If anything, he's still revered by every hockey fan in this country.
Yeah, because nobody knows what he did to me and my mom.
And you think if they knew, they'd stop idolizing him? Some of them might, but I guarantee you that a lot of them won't care, because he's a star athlete and he won lots of games, so that makes him a hero.
She shakes her head sadly.
Do you realize how many abusers are walking around unpunished? How many rape charges are dropped because of insufficient evidence? Or how many date rapists get away with what they've done because the victim is too scared to tell anyone? So yeah, it's not fair, but it's also not worth agonizing over.
Sorrow clogs my throat. You're a better person than I am, then.
That's not true,
she chides.
Remember what you told me on Thanksgiving? How your father isn't worth your anger and revenge? Well, that's the best revenge right there, Garrett. Living well and being happy is how we get over the shit in our past. I was raped, and it was awful. But I'm not going to waste my time or energy either, not on some pathetic, screwed-up guy who couldn't take no for an answer, or his pathetic friends who thought he deserved to be rewarded for his actions.
She sighs again.
I put it all behind me. You really didn't have to confront Rob on my behalf.
I know. Tears sting my eyes. Shit. The last time I cried was at my mom's funeral when I was 12 years old. I'm embarrassed that Hannah is witnessing it, but at the same time, I want her to understand why I did it, even if it means falling apart in front of her. Don't you get it? The thought of anyone hurting you rips me apart. I blink rapidly, fighting the tears. I didn't realize it until tonight, but I think I was broken too. Hannah looks startled.
What do you mean?
I was broken before I met you, I mumble. My entire life revolved around hockey and being the best and proving to my father that I didn't need him. I didn't let myself get close to girls because I didn't want to be distracted from my goals, and I knew that if I did get close to someone, I'd leave them in a heartbeat once I got drafted. I didn't let a single person in, not even my closest friends. And then you came along, and I realized just how fucking lonely I've been. I dropped my head on her shoulder, so tired of everything. After a beat, she pulls my head into her lap and strokes my hair. I curl into her, my voice muffled against her thigh. I hate that you saw me lose it tonight. A rush of self-loathing sears my flesh. You told me I wasn't capable of